Good afternoon. This is Carol Moyle, Committee Assistant Environment and Energy Committee. Today is Wednesday, June 8th, 1:30 p.m. Hearing Room E. Agenda for today includes a public hearing on Senate Bill 237 relating to changes in exclusive farm use zone regulations and marginal lands.
Call the committee meeting in order, House Energy and Environment.
We'll open the session on the hearing on Senate Bill 237. The Senate has been working long and hard on EFU and marginal land issues. We expect to have several hearings on this. The next hearing that will be held after this one will be Tuesday evening at 7 o'clock. Generally goes for 2 hours, from 7 until 9. And the third hearing will be on Friday at our regular time, but be at 1 o'clock instead of 1:30 on Friday. We hope to handle this bill pretty much issue by issue the way we did in the other land use bill that we had. With us today give us an overview, Senator John Kitzhaber, Chairman of Senate Energy and Environment, will take off. Apologize, we don't have full committee, but we're trying here.
I'm lucky if I can get three people there at one time. Looks like a pretty big group to me.
Pardon me, clerk will note those present, those absent are excused, or those not here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm John Kitzhaber, State Senator from District 23 and Chairman of the Senate Committee on Energy and Environment. I'd like to just give you a fairly brief overview of the main issues involved in this today, and I believe some representatives from Agriculture for Oregon are here who can go into it a little more in a little more detail. That is the group that brought this bill in the first place and presented it to the legislature. Stafford Hansel made a statement before our committee in support of 237 just before we passed the bill out. And he said that it was needed primarily because there were two issues identified by the governor's task force on land use that had not been dealt with in 2295, and those two issues were the marginal lands question and lots of record. And Mr. Hansel and as well as the members of my committee feel that Senate Bill 237 is an important complementing piece of legislation to 2295, and I think together they provide a very good comprehensive response to the recommendations that were brought forth by the governor's task force. The bill has been through 15 hearings and work sessions on the Senate side and was passed out of the committee unanimously this past Monday. There are really three main elements to the bill. One is the marge deals with marginal lands, one with lots of record, and one with some revisions in the EFU statutes. I'd like to briefly just take you through those. First, the marginal lands question. The governor's task force heard testimony during its hearings that LCDC's ag lands goal number three was too broad and covered some land that couldn't realistically be expected to be used for agricultural or ranching purposes. And the task force recommended that the land be identified and made available for rural residential use. In 237, we've tried to define marginal land to comply with that recommendation. The definition that we have in 237 seeks to pinpoint those lands that are currently subject to Goal 3, but which have not been making a contribution to Oregon agriculture and are not likely to make a contribution in the future. The test for marginal lands is a two-part test. First, the land has to have poor soil, which is defined as class 4 for worse than class 4 for agriculture. Land that cannot produce at least 85 cubic feet of merchantable wood fiber per year for timber. Or if the land is broken up so that 50% of it is in ownerships of 20 acres or smaller. Okay, so that's an either or. You don't have to meet both of those, but if the land falls into one of those two categories, then you go to the second test. Second part of the test recognizes that there are farms and ranches in Oregon that are very successful in spite of small size and poor soils. And I think in my own area, the wine industry produces, makes a substantial contribution to agriculture and certainly to the economy on small sizes of soil. So if the land is in small ownerships or on poor soils, but makes a contribution to a farm or ranch that produced $20,000 in annual gross income in three of the past 5 years, then it's not considered marginal. Okay, so to be in marginal land, you have to have either poor soil or the land has to be broken up so that 50% of it is in these small parcels. And it cannot be a part of an agricultural operation that's grossing $20,000 a year for three of the past 5 years. That is the definition in the bill. Now, 237 is written so that it authorizes counties to use the marginal land concept. It's not mandatory, it's permissive. initially, also, I think this is an important point, 237 was written to allow the use of marginal lands only after acknowledgement. And the bill was amended to allow counties to use marginal land and that concept in order to achieve acknowledgement. It was felt that this would help in our effort to get all the plans acknowledged. Now, there are a number of uses then allowed on marginal lands. First, all uses that are currently allowed in the EFU zone are also allowed on the marginal land. In addition, dwellings are permitted outright on existing lots of any size that were created or transferred between January 1, 1948 and January 1, 1978. Also, dwellings are allowed outright on 20-acre parcels regardless of when they were created or transferred. So it loosens up the provisions currently applying to EFU zones and allows a lot more residential, rural residential use on marginal lands. The second broad area in the bill is the lots of record issue. If you recall, the governor's task force felt that the 1981 lots of record law was far too narrow, and the task force recommended extending eligibility to lots created or transferred before December 31st, 1964. Senate Bill 237 complies with this and, in fact, goes considerably further. On marginal lands, all existing parcels created or transferred before January 1st, 1948, as opposed to the 64 recommendation of the task force, between 48 and January 1st, 1978, are entitled to residential building permits, regardless of soil quality or the size of the parcel. The only feature retained essentially from the 1981 lots of record law is the contiguous parcel provisions. Contiguous parcels owned by the same person or a relative of that person get only one permit unless the parcels are 20 acres or larger. And we also extended the lot of record concept to EFU zones, except that the eligibility is limited to parcels of 2 acres or smaller, and there also must be a finding that the dwelling will not interfere with the nearby farm operation. The third area in the bill deals with the EFU. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Hill. Senator Kitzhaber, the entire lots of record bill is in, the entire statute is contained in here?
And is the, what's left of it and with our additions is in 237, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
As you know, the lots of record bill from 1981 didn't impact a great many lots. Probably you could count them on one hand. Third area is the improvements to the EFU statutes. The idea here was to provide relief for those individuals that had land currently under Goal 3, but that couldn't be used for that purpose. And on the other side, we tried to ensure that there was some protection or better protection for those commercial farmers that were operating in existing EFU land that was not moved out into the marginal land. First, we dealt with land divisions in 237. It prohibits subdivisions in EFU zone. The bill also brings the state subdivision law into line with the EFU statute by requiring counties to review minor partitions. Second area deals with non-farm dwellings. It limits non-farm dwellings to poorer soils. New non-farm dwellings would be allowed then on classes 4, 5, 6, and 7 soils in an EFU zone if they meet a couple of criteria. I would just point out real briefly in passing that currently counties have to make five findings in order to allow non-farm dwellings on EFU zones, and we reduce this to two criteria, which I think is a significant improvement. Farm dwellings, we make some changes in the statutes concerning farm dwellings in the EFU zones. First, the amendments authorize dwellings on woodlots, which are not now allowed. So that is an additional a provision that will address the concerns of those people that have small woodlots. Secondly, Farm dwellings are permitted outright not only on parcels as large as approved minimum lot size, but also on smaller parcels if the parcels are managed as a part of a farm that's as large as the minimum lot size. And most importantly, probably, Senate Bill 237 establishes standards for farm dwellings in counties that do not use minimum lot sizes in their EFU zones. An applicant can build a farm or a forest dwelling on a farm or woodlot not smaller than 20 acres, or the average farm or woodlot of that type in the county that produces at least $2,500 in annual gross income. We added another provision I think that is also very important to point out in order to assure that opportunities are not foreclosed for young farmers to get started in EFU zones. Our committee opened the door for farm dwellings on parcels smaller than 20 acres. The owner of a small parcel can build a farm dwelling if he has produced $10,000 in annual gross income 2 years in a row, or if he plants trees or other perennials capable of producing $10,000 in gross income annually upon harvest. Those then are the main provisions. As I said, we spent a great deal of time trimming this bill down. I would mention I do have a letter here that summarizes this to Representative Julian, copies for all of the committee members. On page 8 are a list of provisions that were removed from the original 237. There was an awful lot of baggage on the bill when it came to us. We removed these provisions not because we don't feel that they may not have merit, but because we felt that we wanted to try to hone in on those areas mentioned in the governor's task force, and felt that the Joint Legislative Committee on Land Use should then look at these issues in a more leisurely pace over the interim. I'd like to add one more point before I go. I have to get back to a revenue committee, getting ready for whatever you might send us.
No hurry.
Senator, do you only have one revenue committee?
Do we only have one revenue committee? At this point, only one, but we're keeping our options open.
Good God.
You probably have heard some discussion of the exceptions process wending across the building. We have taken the goal to exceptions language and put it into statute. We do have an amendment. It was my initial intention to, after discussing this with Representative Cooley, to put it into 237 to allow this committee an opportunity to look at the exceptions process. However, for a variety of reasons, we reached an agreement with the various parties on the other side and the governor's office, and we intend to put that language into 2295. So I can't encourage you to amend that into 237, but should your committee decide to take a look at that, I'd be more than happy to come over and present the language to you. That issue. I think it's a very good compromise, and we didn't want to jeopardize it over the issue of which bill it went into. We've got the counties and the home builders and AOI and Thousand Friends and the governor's office all on board on this, and we all felt that was a major accomplishment.
Senator, I guess this leaves one thing hanging out, destination resorts. Are you working on that?
Those are not in 237, in the version that you'll get. No.
Okay, will we have any other bills coming over in regard to land use?
I don't believe so. Don't believe so. Well, let me see. There, 234, I guess, pertains to land use, and it deals with the aggregate industry and batching plants and things of that nature. We may be sending that over, but that would be sort of a separate issue.
Questions?
Mr. Chairman, may I pursue what you said?
Dr. Van Leeuwen?
You were not dealing with the destination resort issue then?
No, ma'am. We did not deal with that on the Senate side. We'll leave that to your wisdom and judgment.
Any other questions? Thank you, Senator.
Okay. Thank you.
15 hearings.
Just swell. Particularly given the fact that we have been given two meeting dates a week.
Great. Yeah, copies, that's great. Agriculture for Oregon is one of the prime movers in this bill, so I'd like to call up next Hector McPherson.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have the bill in my folder.
None of us seem to.
Representative Parkinson, the Legislative Council draft 237A-7 is in essence the bill. The bill itself essentially gutted, and as you'll note here, it says delete pages 2 through 16 and insert. So it's pretty much like our last draft on 2295, where the bill itself, the original A and Gross bill, is superfluous.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Priestley.
Could I ask Senator McPherson, I've always been curious about you and where you, how you happened to spring forth with Senate Bill 100 and then go back into obscurity again. How did that all come about?
He hasn't been in obscurity.
I better identify myself for the record. I'm Hector McPherson, a dairy farmer from Linn County, Oregon, and I don't think I've been too obscure. We've had three ballot measures, and I've taken a major part in all of those defending land use, although I haven't gotten involved in other issues.
But where did that Senate Bill 100 come from anyway? Did you think that all up, or?
I always say that that I drafted Senate Bill 100. I picked the number. It happened that I put a task force together because I was not able to gather other help from other senators in doing that on my own, and made the first draft of Senate Bill 100 that was brought to the legislature. And from then on, Senator Halleck and I made many changes, and it went on, worked its way on through the process.
I see. Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, you've heard an excellent presentation by Senator Kitzhaber on the basic bill, but I think you need to go into considerable more detail to understand what there is in it, and so I'm here this afternoon to try and fill in some of those holes and to perhaps go back over the things that he did rather quickly.
We have legislative council draft dated 6683-C.
You have, you should have, yes. I have that in front of me. I also have a thing that is more readable than that, and that is the Ag for Oregon summary dated June 6th. And that will give you most of the details, almost accurately, although I will point out that there's at least one thing on in that that happened after the June 6th deadline, and so is not accurate. First, let me tell you what Ag for Oregon is. There were a group of commercial farmers that got together before the last election when ballot measure 6 was up and wanted to oppose that particular vote. And we organized, and we thought after that time that it was up to us to bring something to the legislature this time that would help reduce the friction on land use. And we, our particular philosophy was this, that we were willing to give some, as far as commercial agricultural land was concerned, to get some of the, to quiet some of the controversy in return for some of the things that we thought were not working right within the exclusive farm use zone. And so we were the first people that developed the marginal lands theory and have been working on it since that time and trying to refine our tests and to bring to the legislature the concept that you have before you today.
Mr. Chairman, before we go further, when I came into this room today, I was informed and said that the B version of 237 had not passed in the Senate. It's passed committee, is that right? And it's this SB 237A-7, and this has been adopted by the committee, is that
yes.
right?
Yes, unanimously last Monday.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Traynor.
Is that correct? It has not yet passed the Senate?
That's no, it has not.
Oh, all right.
It's expected to be voted on this week, I understand, and so yeah, you shouldn't have too long to wait. But considering that it passed out of committee unanimously, we think we can go ahead probably. There's no real problem in that area. The second thing that Ag for Oregon wanted to get done was to develop some more precise types of tests for improving the administration of what goes on in the EFU zone. And so as we go through these tests that I'm going to elaborate on in somewhat greater detail, you'll see the theory here is that we've been having an incursion of non-farm type dwellings and sometimes a parcelization of small farm ownerships in the exclusive farm use zone. We think we can improve the administration of that zone by developing some tests that are more easily administered and which will save the county's time and will certainly save some on the litigation cost, because it will be very evident when a person comes in whether he is entitled to build a house on that particular parcel or is not. I want to take you through the marginal land section first. And so if you would turn to page 2 of the draft bill that you have, I think I can follow along there so that you understand these tests that the senator already told you what they were, but I think if you see them written out, you'll see a little bit more what we're talking about. you understand that what marginal land is, it's land that is, for some reason, not the best for commercial agriculture, and it's not the best for commercial agriculture for two reasons. Either it is so parcelized that it is not attractive to a commercial farm operator that operates in larger tracts with larger equipment and so on, or it is such a quality. And so these are the two tests that we're concerned about. But then at the same time that we're concerned about those, we have to devise a test that will not include all of the going farm operations which may have particularly poor quality soil on them. And if you look at eastern Oregon, you look at southern Oregon, there is a lot of poor land out there, the grazing land, which would meet our poor soil tests, which would not meet neither the agricultural productivity test or the forest productivity test, but which is part of a going operation, and that is used as grazing, and we certainly don't want to interfere with those. And so we start off by saying that the land does not make a significant contribution to a farm operation producing $20,000 or more in gross income in three of the 5 years preceding the effective date of this act. So here we have a given. We have, if it's part of a going operation and does not make a significant contribution, it cannot be included in a marginal lands area. And we start with that, and then we go to the tests of what can be included. Now, I should point out, and I'm going to, I'll run through the test the way we have it in your bill, and then I'm going to point out some changes that were made at the last minute that I think possibly were unwise, and certainly will be recommending that they be changed back. It is located in an area not less than 100 acres, of which 50% is composed of contiguous ownerships that are 20 acres or less in size, excluding from the calculation areas designated for urban development or rural residential use. What we have here, of course, is that this is the parcelization, and this is the kind of thing that's going to include land in western Oregon. Actually, there'll be some in eastern Oregon as well, as you'll see when I bring you to an individual county that has parcelization in eastern Oregon. The second test is that if we're located in an area not less than 100 acres, but is composed...
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Let's go back to one. The way this is written, it's just a little bit hard to visualize. You've got marginal land is... And number one... Just draw us a graphic picture of what combination we could have there.
To get you to marginal land, well, I'm in the process of doing, but it's long and complicated. But let's step back first.
Step back to number one on page two.
Okay, the first thing we eliminate at the top of page two is the land that is part of a going commercial operation. In this case, we take $20,000 as the test, and that's gross. That's not net. That's gross. So it really is quite a small farm. I'm sure that part-time farmers would make that, as well as any full-time farmer wouldn't remain a full-time farmer very long if he only grossed $20,000.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Traer, let's look at that one first. Is gross income gross sales?
Gross income would be gross sales, right. Yes.
You're not talking gross profit, you're talking gross
sales. No, we're not talking profit, we're talking only sales.
Thank you.
Then we get, okay, so we've eliminated the land, can't be included as marginal land if it's part of a going operation that makes this test. Then we go to either it's parcelized in 20 acres so that half of it has to be 20 acres or less, or it is poor enough soil that either it is class 4 and class 5 and above, or it is has a site class of 85 cubic feet growth of wood per acre. So we cover both the agricultural base and the wood base.
Thank you. Would you describe what an area of not less than 100 acres is? Is that any particular given 100 acres you want to pick out, or?
No, that is a good question, and it is any one that they think might fit. You draw your 100 acre circle or square or gerrymandered, however you may want to. Then you apply the tests within it. And within that, whatever you've drawn, you have to find that 50% or more is parcelized, if you're talking about the parcelization, or it is predominantly in class 5 through 8.
Why did you limit that to a 100-acre area?
That is one of the things, and I think that is a mistake. that was put in the bill at the very last time, at the very last session that they had. I think it was in an error, and I think that is too small. Let me tell you why I think, since the question has came up, that it is too small. I can visualize, you could take a 100-acre area in a place like, say, Clackamas County. You would have three, say, let's say, 20-acre parcels within that that you're looking at, as which would make up more than 50%. You end up then with three parcels that make that qualify so that your 100 acres presumably is qualified. But then we find, if we look at that some of those parcels, let's say that two of them within that 100 acres of the 20 acres are actually making the income test. They may be in strawberries or nursery stock or something like that, so that you would knock them out. So then you end up with those small parcels that you brought in to have your parcelization thing be knocked out, and then the rest of it would qualify as marginal land, the one parcel of 20 acres and whatever is alongside of it that made up the 100 acres. I think that is too small. We started out with 320 acres, and I think that's a much more reasonable figure when you apply the test. Otherwise, you get down into such a small area, you could I can visualize that being utilized in areas where it should not be, where it would be out among the EFU land that should not be. Anyway, that 100 acres is, I think, is an error, and probably this committee should look very closely at changing that back to the 320 acres, or at least some figure greater than 100.
Hector, in the parcelization, is this, whether it's 100 acres or 320 acres, up to the applicant who is applying for a dwelling or whatever, to define this area in his application, or can this be brought back by some appellant and said, you know, no, you didn't do this, I'm going to gerrymander it over here and knock you out?
This would be, Mr. Chairman, the same as any other zoning type situation. The county would have to identify the area that was to be zoned in that particular fashion. And they can't, they have to get it approved by LCDC before it can actually go into effect, but they can go ahead immediately and start looking at their areas and see what they think is appropriate for this kind of an area. So it is the county that does it. It isn't that a person can come in and say, well, I'd want to be marginal land, and therefore I should be put into it. He can come in and say that, but then the county is the one that's going to have to look at the area and find out whether it is appropriate and whether it is can be put in there.
Do you envision then that the county will go ahead and zone for marginal land, or do you think it's going to be done piecemeal by applicants who say, come in and say, hey, I think I should be in marginal land instead of EFU, or how is that going to happen?
I think you'll find that the counties look at their area and decide what is appropriate for marginal lands and then provide it, obviously after public hearing.
Because it is optional.
It's optional. Obviously, the county doesn't have to put in marginal land if it's getting along fine without it. But when you see what possibly that would do for some of the counties, I think you'll find that it is used.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Peterson,
I'm very apologetic for these interruptions, Mr. McPherson, and I really am a fan of yours, but I've never met you, so but I did want to ask you these questions. I'm really kind of amazed at meeting you, because there's been so many people have taken your name in vain and everything. It's just
that goes for both of us.
Yeah.
Excuse me, but weren't you both in the legislature at the same time?
No, I wasn't here in 71. You were here in maybe your second part of your term. You were in 71 and 73?
73, and I believe you were here.
I never met you during that time. I never met you. Mr. McPherson, I've gotten past this part about $20,000 to be a margin. I'm trying to get from to margin the square that is marginal land. First of all, it has to have less than $20,000 gross. Now, the next branch, I have two branches to go in, but apparently both branches are 100 acres or more.
Yes.
Is that right? And then, but the conditions of one box, what is the first one here about 20 acres or less?
That is the parcelization test. The parcelization test works in areas like Washington County. In fact, that will bring marginal land to some of the areas west of the Cascades. What you find, and I should point this out, is that as far as the poor lands test, there's very little in Western Oregon. Because of the site class, almost all is quite good forestry land. And most of the volume, cubic foot volume of wood that is produced is over, you find the site class goes over 100, and our cutoff point in, at the present time is 85.
Representative Fairn.
Why did you pick that 85 figure in that it is very low if you look at some very poor forest land in southwest Oregon?
I'm glad you brought that up, because that's another one that I'd like to have you look, take a very good look at. We brought in 50 cubic feet because we were particularly concerned about eastern Oregon. Because in eastern Oregon, you know, the commercial timber companies are making a tremendous battle to try and save land from wilderness area that only produces 20 cubic feet. And so I think that probably that 50 cubic feet, it will have no impact as near as we can determine in western Oregon. But in eastern Oregon, we better look and possibly change that back to the 50 that we had in the bill originally.
You mean 20.
They had 50. Going.
The 50 cubic feet per acre per year of growth in wood.
Mr. Chairman. Did you look at forest land site classes at all rather than going by cubic feet per acre?
We did. We thought it was more precise to simply state the cubic feet. As I understand, the 50 is the, what is it, site class 5, is it? I'm not too clear on, since I'm not a forester, the break between the two, but the 50 is...